I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, and my name is Dick. You'll also be hearing from Mel, K2 Kilo Echo Yankee, and Mel and Dick attempt to organize this very enthusiastic crew that meets most Sunday evenings on the Technical Met. We call this the brand new improved Technical Met. This is the second session of the new improved Technical Met, and what's improved about it? The way we treat the first hour. A major complaint has been issued quite a few times, and I wasn't hearing it, and now I hear it, and that is people who sign in during the first hour sometimes do not have the ability to wait around until their question gets answered, 1.5 hours, 2 hours later. They haven't got that much time. So during the first hour, we handle primarily brief questions, or it can be a non-brief question, but you just get the first fraction of the answer, the headline, so to speak. And you'll be told that there's more to the story that can be discussed at a later time after the 9 o'clock or 9:30 period. By 9 o'clock, we try to... By 9 o'clock, we try to switch over to the mailbag, because these are the younger people just getting their ham license, sending in questions. And we try to handle those questions. They have to go to sleep at some reasonable hour. There may be school tomorrow. Who knows? So the first hour are the brief questions, in which you've got two choices as to how you can get your more complicated question answered during the first hour. You can accept the headlines and the first fraction of the question being answered during the first hour, and during the later hours we dig deeper into any of these subjects, or you could, if you desire, ask the question multiple times during multiple weeks, and you get the first third of the question this week and the next third of the question next week, so to speak. So what we've got to avoid is the longer discussions, longer explanations that force everyone to keep waiting. So that's the new improved technique, the new improved technique. Now, I know that Rich, our president, K2, you know his call letters. Boy, my foggy brain today. Rich Citrin is going to be telling us about what changes are going on with the machine tonight, and how you can get around those changes. Go right ahead, Rich, K2RIW.
All right, thanks, Dick. And this is Richie K2 Canby. Well, unless Eric has gone out in the snow and done some hands-on stuff, both of our EchoLink nodes are down. And for those of you who try to listen to EchoLink, and obviously some people outside of our area won't even be hearing this message, but what we've tried to do is give you this information. First of all, we've always had, not always, but over the last several months, have had streaming audio of the 8.5 repeater, and that you can access by going to www.whiskey2limaindiaecho.net, and he has streaming audio there. You just have to page down or look, it's right on his first page there. You follow streaming audio and you can come to the Limarck repeater, so you can listen there. You can also go to our website, www.limarck.org, and right on our first page is that same link to the W2LIE net, but it might be easier for you to go that route.
Dick?
Go ahead, Eric.
Now, I can use the EchoLink node on Plainview. That'll get them back into this system. If anybody wants to call in on EchoLink, it gives you another pass.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dick. That was the third part of it. EchoLink node is 500-940, 500-940, and that will be linked to one of our other repeaters. So with Eric there, you've got all the information that you need, Dick. This is K2K Andy.
Thank you, Rich. One of the things that we will be discussing sometime is to what percentage, so to speak, of out-of-area questions do we think is proper? In other words, as it is right now, by way of IRLP, EchoLink, streaming audio, and whatever, people in many areas, and some of them quite far out of the area, are able to listen to the TechNet. And Mel and I and Rich are getting quite a few complimentary letters about people who do listen to the TechNet. I'm pretty sure they are pretty sure that they're gaining information and they think it's worthwhile. But now, depending on the number of questions that we would like to accept from out of areas, there's a conflict of interest on that particular one, and some form of decision will eventually have to be made. In other words, as we accept questions far outside of the area, extra delays are required. It's very difficult for people to get in because of all the timing. Some of that's being corrected. But the TechNet originally started off, let me drop. The TechNet really started off way back in 1982 as a one-hour get-together on repeaters in the New York City area for people to ask questions to each other and get most of the time answers. Because of the frustration of people having more questions than time, it went to 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, and now occasionally it goes for 5 hours on multiple Sunday evenings. In other words, just handling the questions that we attempt to handle in the New York City area, northern New Jersey, southern New York, southwestern Connecticut, and Long Island. People are complaining about the fact that the questions take too long, that the amount of time is not enough, and so on. And so as we accept more and more questions of out areas, that's going to aggravate that situation. So what is the right mix? That's a decision for the group to make. This is, in theory, this is ham radio by the hams and for the hams, if you know what I mean. That's the, what was that original quote from the Gettysburg Address, government by the people, for the people, so to speak. So that's the way it has to be decided. We'll eventually be asking that question. Now, as I said, this is a new and improved technical net, so please give us your call letters and your name if you do have a question or a comment for the net, and start doing that right now. K2RIW listening.
N2EO.
Rich recognized.
Evening. K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Okay. So people who have a question or a comment for the net during the first hour, which it can be the longer questions, but you're not going to get the long answer, and preferably the briefer questions, give us your call letters and name at this time. K2RIW listening. And as you probably noticed, there are now four tones as a method of making sure everyone waits long enough. We have during the enthusiasm, during the heat of battle, so to speak, we quite often pile on top of each other and don't get a chance to reset the machine. Let me ask Eric this question, Eric. To me, the tones would be most pleasing if they were always in the order that sounds like NBC, if you know what those tones sound like. And occasionally they come out in an other order. Is there any way of trying to make the order come out right, and that helps people know when the timing, where you are in the timing, and it's a slightly more pleasing sound? So is the NBC order of the tones at all possible? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Well, I can make them anything we want. It's just someone suggested to try it, so we tried it. You know, it's actually other folks are making the decision about what it sounds like. I mean, I have a whole bunch of different ones that can be used, but there's nothing fixed about it, Dick.
Yeah, right now it's in the NBC order, and occasionally it can become some other order. In other words, are the tone delays for the individual functions, and sometimes it's a race problem where one function comes before another. Is that what causes the order of the tones to occasionally be reversed? Over to you, Eric.
What do you mean be reversed?
Okay. Right now it's in the NBC tone order. Quite often it is in the BC, and you know, it's reversed. The tones sometimes come out in a different order, and that's not quite as pleasing. I'm wondering if that's something that is adjustable. Over to you, Eric.
There's three different kinds of tones that are happening. It depends upon where the source is. Something from Glen Oaks is ding, ding, ding. Something from the Echolink, which is another set of tones, and something from IOLP is another tone. So I think that may be what you're referring to.
Okay. So therefore, by the nature of the tones, the order in which you hear them, that does tell you uniquely what the source was. Is that what you're saying, Eric? Go ahead.
That's correct, Dick.
Okay, very good. We're all being educated. I thank you very much. Okay, one last call. Anyone with questions for the first hour during the new improved TechNet, where the first hour is the more brief questions, the more brief answers. Doesn't matter if your question is a long one, but the more brief answers will be taking place during the first hour. Give me your call letters and name at this time if you've got a question or a comment. K2RIW listening. Okay. Maybe everybody's still away on that Christmas holiday and getting home this this particular weekend because of the airline schedules is going to be very difficult. Rich, M2EO, what's going on in Whitestone? And is Jingles happy with all that snow? N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, good evening, Dick. Yeah, well, he doesn't particularly like the snow. And it's coming down here. I have a security monitor. And I'm looking at the street right now. It doesn't look good. Dick, as you know, I'm very involved with 75 meter AM, where the guys are running very wide bandwidth. Most of the guys, including myself, are taking older equipment like the Johnson, in my case, the Ranger 2, making mods to it, getting rid of the interstage transformer, which restricts bandwidth, and putting in a 12AU7 as a phase inverter, KT88 modulator tubes, redoing the whole modulator, the audio circuit. Anyway, I've done all that, and I tell you, listen there, these guys sound good. Many a time I've done a double take when somebody comes on, thinking somebody's in a room with me. It sounds that good. Let me let it reset. All right, I don't know if you heard what I was saying to John before, WGB. I've been working on an audio system here. I started about a year ago and then let it lay. I'm using an RE27 broadcast mic. I use one mic for the whole station, five transmitters, and I switch it. I've got level controls for each individual radio, and the microphone goes into a Behringer preamp, then into a Behringer equalizer, comes out of a that goes into an expander compressor. The audio feed that's been processed goes to a distribution switch so I can switch it to each radio and run the levels individually as I need them per radio. What I wanted to do, Dick, right now I'm listening to myself. I've been playing with this today. I'm listening to the audio feed. You probably don't hear it because I've got the phase reversal on. It's 180 out, so it's not feeding back. Let me get a reset. All right, enter we up. What I wanted to do, Dick, was build a monitoring panel. Maybe Eric knows what they actually do in broadcasting. I'm trying to do that in a simple way without spending a fortune on it. What I want to be able to do, I'm listening to the audio feed as it goes into each transmitter. I want to be able to select with a switch and go over to the output of a transmitter so I can compare what's going in and what's coming out. Now, for the AM stuff, it's pretty simple. I've got an inline detector with a diode. It's basically a crystal radio, and it goes to the audio amp. That's not a problem. But for FM and sideband, I'm not sure exactly what to do. For FM, I assume I could take some type of chip, an FM detector chip, a PLL chip, something, make an FM detector, but I'm not sure what to put before it. Maybe some type of a broadband amplifier. I want it to be TRF, tuned radio frequency, so to speak, so I get the wide bandwidth, so I'm really hearing what the transmitter's putting out. The sideband, I think it's going to be a little more difficult. I'm going to have to use some type of an AM detector, rather a product detector with a BFO on it. And what I want to be able to do is have switched from each transmitter output or the audio feed like I'm doing now, and just build it into a box. Back to net, into EO. Any thoughts, Dick?
Yeah, I've got a number of thoughts on all of the above. First of all, back in the days when voice-operated relay, Vox circuits, were popular, you speak into the microphone, the transmitter detected the presence of the audio, automatically flipped the receiver, flipped the transceiver from the receive mode to the transmit mode, and then hung for some length of time and had some amount of attack time. And now for, you stop talking, and the radio is now playing back to you, audio. The audio coming out of the loudspeaker, if you're not using earphones, is going to be fed back into the microphone and start the Vox circuit all over again, a false alarm, so to speak. So there was an anti-Vox circuit. In other words, the audio was being fed from the output, not from the electronics that fed the loudspeaker. Some of that audio was fed out of phase into the microphone circuit, so that in theory, at least as far as the low frequency notes are concerned, audio picked up by the microphone coming out of the loudspeaker acoustically was being somewhat canceled by the audio of the anti-Vox circuit, and therefore, for the most part, you didn't get the cancellation, you didn't get the false alarming of the Vox circuit. Let me drop. There's a problem with all of that, though. Obviously, 1 kilohertz is the middle of the audio band. Because sound travels through air at close to 1,090 feet per second, you could say the wavelength of a 1KC note in air is about a foot. Therefore, when you've got 1 foot of separation between your loudspeaker and the microphone, there's already 360 degrees almost of phase shift just in that path length. The air is a kind of a transmission line. It's got a propagation. It's got a velocity factor. The velocity factor is around 1090 feet per second. So the word 180 degrees out of phase really doesn't have meaning. You've got a very loud amount of audio feedback right now with 180 degree phase reversal, which as far as the low frequency notes is working. I'm wearing earphones and I do hear a little bit of high frequency ring in your circuit right now. So there's only a very limited amount of anti-voxing function you can get with a so-called 180 degree phase shift. You got to accept that. Let me drop. Now, there were a couple of guys, one particular guy named Frank, who is now a silent key, who is a member of the 147-575 simplex group, who had done some careful monitoring and careful adjustment of his audio. By way of a good studio microphone, by way of the right kind of an equalizer network where every 50 hertz in the audio, he could peak or valley the audio. He could adjust the slide switches, if you know what I mean. He eventually came out with an extremely good-sounding voice. In other words, he really sounds like a good broadcaster. He meets a guy in present, and he didn't sound anywhere as good as he did over the air. And then when he went to his automobile, his mobile rig didn't have that network that he had at the shack, and he didn't recognize him as the same guy. So audio that is properly equalized can have some extremely pleasing sounds to it. And so therefore, some of the roll-off that you think you're eliminating by eliminating interstage coupling transformers, except for the transformer going into a saturation characteristic, if it's got a gentle roll-off, by properly processing the speech, you can get all of that nice round sound that I think you're looking for with all of the high-frequency notes present too, so you have lots of sibilance and lots of presence of the speech. So audio itself, it's a whole science of how you make good-sounding audio. We've all heard sideband rigs that have a lot of speech processing, and maybe the audio does get through in a pileup, but you have a real rag chew with that guy during quiet times, and that highly processed speech can be very annoying and requires an awful lot of mental processing. You get a lot of mental fatigue trying to figure out what the guy is saying. Let me drop. So those are a few of my comments on audio, the audio feedback, the quality of the audio and whatever. That's a whole art and science that when it comes to human beings, the fastest input-output you can get from a human being is speech. none of us, I mean, when I get real excited, I can probably talk 150 words a minute. Nobody in his right mind can type that fast or send Morse code that fast. So when it comes to real I.O., speech is it. And to make that speech sound good is something we should all have a high desire for. Now when it comes to listening to FM, any old receiver will give you a good feedback of FM. By that I mean the front end can be overloaded like crazy, and the nature of FM is such that what comes out of that ratty old FM rig that you've got, that you have sitting on the shelf you don't ordinarily use, but you tune it to the frequency you're transmitting on right now, as long as its circuits are working correctly, the audio feedback you get from it coming out while you're transmitting will have, in almost all situations, the exact fidelity that your transmitter is really transmitting at that time. So FM has got this very friendly characteristic because of the limiter. So rather than build a separate circuit, just picking up somebody's throwaway radio and using it for FM monitoring, that's an easy way to go. And it comes to AM monitoring, things are a lot easier. Let me drop. Because the transmitting you're doing is so close to you, by the way, you cannot use any other AM or single sideband receiver to monitor what you're transmitting. Because your transmitter is so darn close. I mean, a good receiver might have a dynamic range of, let me pick a number, 100 decibels, if it's got a real good AGC circuit. In other words, the weakest signal that gives you reasonable audio output, and the strongest signal that doesn't give you splatter, overload, cross-coupling, intermodulation distortion, so on. Those two, on a good receiver, can be 100 dB apart. However, when you're transmitting in your shack, and you've got another receiver in the shack, unless that receiver is in an extremely well-shielded box, and maybe that's an approach, unless it's an extremely well-shielded box, that receiver is picking up a signal 130 decibels above threshold. And as such, it's going to be overloaded, it's going to splatter, it's going to give you all kinds of characteristics, it's going to lie to you as to what is the nature of the signal that you're sending. So I think the next step would be, in the case of your AM or sideband monitoring of RF output, you've either got to take a radio and eliminate an awful lot of its forward stages, eliminate a lot of its gain, and carefully study which stages are being overloaded, or else put it into a properly shielded box so it gets a signal that's a lot weaker. But now you've got to be careful. In that shielded box where it's picking up the signal, where is it picking it up from? If it's picking it up directly from the antenna that you're transmitting with, no problem. If it's picking up that signal simultaneous with the bounce off the signal of the signal across the street from a building, and now those two signals are beating against each other, you're going to get a different characteristic depending on what frequency the audio is on. In other words, because of the delay to the signal across the street and back, some of those audio notes are going,
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
Some of those individual audio notes are going to be out of phase and in phase with the other audio notes of what you're transmitting. And therefore, if this is the best of all worlds, you'd have a monitoring station a mile away picking up the signal and sending it back to you in a high-fidelity circuit. So monitoring your amplitude-modulated signal, I'm beginning to think the best way to do it, Rich, is to have some form of signal sampler on the transmitter itself, on the transmission line, a simple directional coupler on the transmission line going into a well-shielded, very low sensitivity radio. There's lots of ways you can make a radio low in sensitivity, and it's got to be in a shielded box to make sure it's not also simultaneously getting the signal that's bouncing around in the environment. So, by the way, the bouncing signal in the environment, another reason why the FM receiver, even though you think it should be overloaded, doesn't have that problem, is it only chooses the strongest signal by way of its limiter. And most of the time, the strongest signal is the good one, and it's got 20 decibels or more of rejection of all the weaker signals. A discriminator buys that all for you. An AM envelope detector and product detector does not do that. It gives you everything. So you've got to make sure it's listening to the right thing. So I'm beginning to think the right kind of monitoring of AM is directly on your transmission line with a simple directional coupler. And the directional coupler does not have to be made for the frequency you're using. If you picked up a 10 gigahertz directional coupler, which as a sampler on your HF frequencies is now a 60 decibel coupler, even though the label on the front cover says 10 dB. That's more than all you need. In other words, each watt you put out, it picks up a milliwatt. And that would be perfect as a monitoring system into a AM monitoring receiver. Wonder if some of that helps, Sir Rich. N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2KEY, my comment.
Yeah, let's see. I bet you've been down this road already, Mel. Let's see how you solve this. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Oh, for years I've always used the scope. I've had scopes built into, I've picked up many years ago, I picked up quite a number of those one-inch Millen scopes. They fit into the same size opening hole, punch hole, as a meter. And the one for AM, of course, you put one in for AM, and the vertical line on it displays the RF, is the RF loop coupling to the final section. You couple the audio circuit directly into the horizontal, and you get that nice triangular pattern, some of them call it a two-tone, some use a two-tone pattern on it, and it usually displays a very accurate reproduction of what you're transmitting. I use them on my sideband rig, I've used them on my AM rig, I have an old Johnson Viking 2, I have the Collins KWS 1, they are both AM rigs, and I don't use them too much, but they work quite well, and I basically always watch the scope tick over.
So that triangular waveform where the audio could be the horizontal axis of the oscilloscope, the RF could be the vertical axis, and therefore in the case of an AM transmitter, you'll have a vertical line in the middle of the screen when you're not talking, and that vertical line in the middle of the screen with a certain height to it will become a triangle that to the left becomes a sharp tip to the triangle, to the right it becomes a much taller vertical line, and it fills in that whole triangle. So with AM, that's what it would sound like. With single sideband, there would be nothing on the screen at all except the triangle fills up when you start speaking. It would be a double-sided triangle, sort of a butterfly or a bat wing, if you were transmitting double sideband suppressed carrier, which very few of us transmit. So scope monitoring is an extremely nice way of going. And I think Heathkit, among other companies, made particular oscilloscopes made for transmitter monitoring, and I guess some guys use them continuously, and I'll bet you there are some software-defined radios and some of the high-end radios where one of the methods of display on the front panel would be that triangular waveform. Is that approximately true, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW?
Well, today, of course, you can get some very sophisticated displays on the software, the SDR stuff, software-defined radios. Some of the other radios, of course, have had the virtual displays now. They have waterfalls, they got, you name it, you know, the sky's the limit today with the digital technology. But I'm going to go back to the basic technology, like you say. And if you look in any of the old handbooks, ARRL handbooks, they show you basically how to put together a very simple scope. The scope that's built in is powered by the B-plus in the radio, and the filament is derived, of course, also. The RF pickup is a gimmick loop inside, and the audio, you just tap into the audio. Well, in the case of the old AM rig, you connected it right to the audio output circuit, the modulation transformer. In the case of the sideband, you used a pickup, a little pickup network that you connected into the processor. And, yes, I could say Heathkit did build, you know, sold those scopes and all for externally hookups, but it was nicer to have it into each radio and know the characteristics. You know, the triangle was sort of concave to size. You were not pushing it hard enough. If you were pushing it too hard, it sort of bulged out, Dick, over.
So I can tell that, Rich, you're looking forward to the day when you transmit some nice, round, broadcast-sounding audio on either AM or sideband on the HF bands. Is that approximately what you're looking for, Rich? N2EO, K2RIW.
I would say so, Dick. Let me lower this. All right. Yeah, by the way, maybe you didn't hear what I said. I already have basically a crystal radio built into a wine sampler that I made on AM. That works very well. It's right in the coaxial line. But, all right, FM, you answered the question. I'm not quite sure what to do with SSB. Probably a line detector, but instead of using an AM detector, probably build a product detector into it. So that's the story. And I've been setting stuff up here. A lot of guys on AM on 75 work in the broadcasting field, so I guess a little bit rubs off.
This is N2EO.
That's one of the things we got. We got the NBC chimes too, Dick. So back to that, K2RIW. By the way, do you happen to know, somebody had given me a model number. There's a gal in Brooklyn she gave me a model number. She's a ham, she's in broadcasting, of Sony headphones that are kind of preferred headphones in the broadcast industry. I lost the sheet with the model number. Does anybody know, or Mel, or maybe you do, Dick? The preferred headphones, I think, are about somewhere between $100 and $200.
Okay, let me pass that question out to the net. Anyone know of a very high-quality set of earphones, particularly the ones that are apparently requested or recommended for broadcast service, which really allows you to hear the audio 20 hertz to 20 kc, so to speak? Does anybody know of a preferred set of earphones in the $100 to $200 category? Give me your call letters right now, K2RIW.
K2KY.
Mel recognized, and anyone else?
VP2IKT.
WB2IKT. Okay. Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
So what I have a very good pair of phones, Dick, made by a company called Sennheiser. Sennheiser, Dick, over.
Could you spell that one, Mel? Spell Sennheiser, and what's your guess as to the approximate price, and where do you buy them?
Bought them in New York at a place called V&H. Sennheiser. Out of the dark. I've looked at it and I remember. S-Y-N-H-E-I-S-E-R, something like that. Sennheiser. And they're very high class. They're very good. Yeah, they're over $100. I know that for a fact. But, I'll tell you, I'm very happy with the Heil headphones. I got the Heil sound deadening phone, and I find they're terrific in a ham shack, because with that sound deadening feature they have in there, you know, you have like background fans running or whatever, it's amazing how it kills the background noise tremendously, Dick, over.
Yeah, pilots and other people who work in a noisy environment are also able to buy these sound-canceling earphones, and there's about three or four respected brands on those. Bose is one of them, and a little bit on the pricey side. Let's see, the set of earphones I'm wearing right now are JVC. They were made for some kind of an audio lab, and the company I was working at the time, somebody threw the darn things out because they were closing down that particular lab. Craziness. The way the things that get thrown out are kind of amazing to me. I've got a little bit of a reputation of being a dumpster diver. I don't take it quite that far, but my goodness, do we throw out valuable stuff. We, meaning people in the United States. George, WB2IKT, what's your recommendation for a good set of phones? Tell us a brand name, model number, and approximate price and where you buy it. You got it, George, K2RIW.
Great, thank
WB2IKT. The standard for many years for the broadcast industry, and I'm a veteran there. I was with WLIR Radio for many years as their chief engineer. You know, there's no real actual standard that people use, but a very popular one was the COSS, K-O-S-S, and the model number was the Pro 4, AA. Now, that's a type of headphone that seals your ear with big silicon-filled pads on either side of your ear, and it deadens the sound coming in so that it sort of blocks some of the external sound. Now, the headsets that Mel was talking about, and I think he misspelled it, it's Sennheiser, S-E-N-N-H-E-I-S-E-R. That's a very respected line of headphones, but they have foam pads on your ears, and they don't block external sound. If that's the kind of headset you want, Sennheiser has a lot of models. They're really very good. But the COSS Pro 4 is the set that most folks in the broadcast industry would use, at least at the time I was with the radio station. Back to you, Dick.
Very good information, George. Those COSS Pro-4 AA, I think you said, is the top of the line. Where would Rich buy those, and what's the approximate price if you happen to know today, or even if you know what the price was 10 years ago? Tell us. Back to you, George.
Actually, the price on those was fairly reasonable. It was in the vicinity of about $80, and I guess the best way to figure out who sells it today is to go look it up on the Internet, and if you can wait a second or so, I'll do that because I'm in front of a computer. I'll just do a Google search on it.
Very fine, George. Now, that's more reasonable than Rich expected. Now, Rich has got a pocket full of money. I'm having some fun with him. And he's willing to spend $150 to get a good set of phones. And you're in the process of giving him more than one set for that number of dollars. So when you have that information, come on back with it. We've only had one person question us so far in the rapid section, the first hour of the TechNet. I'm going to throw it out for questions one more time, or Rich can pick it up if he's got an add-on to this one. So anyone with further questions or comments for the quick section of the new improved TechNet, give me a call, that is a name right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KT with the cost.
Go right ahead, George. Cost and who sells them?
Amazon.com, and it looks like they're costing something in the area of, you know, $70. If you want a used one, they're $49.95, so they're relatively reasonably priced. I don't think these ones will break the bank.
Sounds like you've used that brand, George. You're pretty happy with them, and the way that gel flows around your head and forms itself a nice tight seal. Sounds to me like it blocks out external noise. Sounds to me like you could even wear them with the cord tucked into your pocket if you were mowing the lawn and you wanted ear protection. Is that approximately true, George?
You could, but you'd be better off with the noise-canceling headset from Audio Technica, which is the one I'd recommend, or the Bose, which is pretty decent. And, Richie, just for you, the COSS Pro 4AA has a attachment for a boom microphone on it. Now, the stock model doesn't come with one, but I think you can order a boom microphone that will fit specifically on that thing. So you could get a nice headset with a microphone built in. You know, just a choice, and it's definitely a broadcast-quality headset, very good for music, and it's very good for high-fidelity speech as well.
Hey, George, you just said a mouthful. When it comes to what you believe is a higher quality noise-canceling headset, Audio Technica. Audio, T-E-C-H-N-I-C-A. What model number, roughly how many dollars, and where do you buy that? I'm interested in those. Over to you, George.
Yeah, I'm opening up my pair now, so I'll tell you what the model number is when I get it opened. They were approximately $120 or so, and I think Micro Center stocks them.
My goodness, that's a nice price. The ones made by Bose, I think, are much higher in price than that. Micro Center, that's a new one on me. Is that a sell that a store that sells high-quality audio equipment? Where's the nearest Micro Center? And I guess, again, I should have Googled that one, but back to you, George, for any further info.
Okay, this is WB2IKT. The Micro Center is a computer store. They sell computers and computer parts and monitors, and they specialize in it. Very good. The one on Long Island is in Westbury on Post Avenue or Merrick Avenue. Actually, it's on Merrick Avenue. Just on the west side of Eisenhower Park, right over there. Okay, the Audio-Technica is called a Quiet Point, and it's model number ATH-ANC7, and highly recommend them. They're very good. They have a couple of dB better noise suppression than the Bose, and you can listen to music on them, and they're great for speech, too.
WS2N.
Paul recognized. One final question. Is the Audio-Technica ATH, I think you said ANC-7, would a pilot of a private aircraft be tempted to use one of those? Over to you, George, first.
There's a question going on. I don't see why not, except that I believe anything that sits in a cockpit probably has to be certified in some way by the FAA, and I kind of doubt that these things are certified at the pilot side. Certainly the passengers use them.
Would a private pilot using a set of noise-canceling earphones be violating any FAA rules if he was not transporting a passenger? Over to you on that one, George.
Yeah, I'm afraid you'll have to find another authority for that one. I don't know the answer, Dick.
Very good, George. The smart man knows what he doesn't know. And I just bypassed some of the tones. I shouldn't do that. WS2N, go right ahead with your information. And also, while you got the mic, Paul, tell us if you've got a space report tonight. Because we're a little light on questions. We're going to pick you up pretty soon. WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, Dick. The space report, we talk about what's gone on with the private launch recently, but I just want to comment about the headphones. I don't know if Radio Shack sells these type of things anymore, but mine was made by Realistic. They call it Nova, N-O-V-A, 40. I've had them over 20 years, and like they were described before, you know, it's got this big cushions on the earphones, but not in these $100 ranges. This is probably, you know, $39.99 or something at the time. So very, very good, you know, left and a right. It is a stereo headphone, so you got to watch when you buy these things. You might have to pick up the adapter. Go to mono for either for the small jack or the big jack for the HF ring. You might need to convert it from the stereo to the mono, and they sell the adapters, and you just plug it on and plug it into the radio, and you're good to go. But I mean, very good cushions. I mean, very quiet. Like you said, you can probably take them outside and mow them along with them. And I have regular ear quieters from they use at work, and they cut things down, 96 dB. This is probably, you know, very close to that. It's unbelievable. You can't hear anything in the house, though. I mean, if the phone rings, you might be able to hear it. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, from time to time, I've worn the kinds of earplugs that they use on flight lines where jet aircraft are taking off. And some of those, you know, they plug into your ear canal itself, and they deaden the sound so much that when you install those and wait a few minutes until your ears come up to full sensitivity, and by the way, that's an interesting characteristic a human body has. Call it a dark adaption, call it sound adaption, call it a taste or smell adaption. In the case of going outside to watch me meteors, stars, or whatever, it takes at least 20 minutes in the full darkness for your eyes to become fully dark adapted, for you to go from what is it now called? Scotoptic vision to photopic, photopic vision to scotoptic vision. Anyhow, your eyes flip, and the chemistry of the retina changes. A whole bunch of things happens in about 20 minutes, and maybe it comes to full sensitivity in 30 or 40 minutes. So you'd be amazed how many times I didn't know this. I was walking down the road where I used to live when I was a youngster. I was seeing a very bright aurora. A man who worked for Brookhaven Laboratories lived next door to me, and I was running into his house and saying, "Hey, you've got to see this." And I forced him to come running outside, and he didn't see a thing. Well, I wasn't smart enough to realize that his eyes were not yet dark adapted, and he didn't know about that. So when it comes to hearing, I think your hearing becomes more sensitive when it's in a quiet area. And once you're wearing really good, let me drop. Once you're wearing really good earplugs for something like 20 minutes, and your hearing comes up to full sensitivity, my goodness, does the world change. With a little bit of care, you will hear the blood pulsing through your eardrum. You'll hear your own heartbeat. You go walking around, you hear the pounding sound of your bones within your body. Various things take on a very different characteristic if your hearing is working pretty well and you're wearing the right kind of sound-deadening earplugs, whatever. And that's very required on in the case of a flight line, because you take, for instance, an airplane that's not intended to be silent. It's intended to be extremely high in performance. I'm talking about a B-1B bomber. I'm talking about one of those taking off from Edwards Air Force Base in California. And if you are directly behind that airplane when he is taking off and if he turns on full afterburners, if you're not wearing ear protection, your hearing, in theory, will be permanently damaged. If you are less than 2,200 feet, in other words, approximately a half a mile behind that airplane, if you're standing a little bit less than a half a mile behind that airplane when it's taking off and you're not wearing ear protection, there's a high probability your hearing has been permanently damaged. My goodness, is that loud. I've been on that base when they were testing one of those engines, and you just don't know what loud is. Okay, so, and by the way, the way people produce extremely loud audio with sometimes modified audio systems in their automobile, because they just like booming hi-fi sounds. Wow, is that dangerous. Somebody could be beeping a horn, they would never hear it. There are multiple occasions when I'm sitting in my living room and I think an earthquake is happening, and I realize that through my thermal pane window, 150 feet away where the road is, through the trees, I'm hearing a guy drive by with a hi-fi system. And the booming of his hi-fi is shaking my house and making me think an earthquake is taking place.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Guarantee that guy is damaging his hearing. And I know there's been various articles written on that exact subject, that our youth these days loves really loud noises and music, and as such, they're damaging the hearing. I don't know how many times I've gone to a wedding reception, and I was extremely annoyed by the fact that the DJ thought that he's got to really shake the floor so that people can feel the music through their feet, and I'm sitting in front of people that I haven't seen in 10 years, and I want to talk to them, and if I shout full blast in that reception room, the person across the table from me can mouth read, if you know what I mean. He can lip read, but he can't hear what I'm saying. That's crazy. And so I've been tempted to invent some kind of a earphone system with a noise-canceling microphone so that I install one on him and install one on me, and we can hold a conversation. Because other than that, the only other way we can hold a conversation is to leave the reception room. There's got to be a better solution to all of that. Anyways, any further questions? Oh, let me go back to you, Paul. You do have a report. I think what I'm about to do is Mel is not going to be mine at all if we pick up his mailbag a little bit earlier so that...